And it is 9 a.m. in the West Coast. It is 12 noon in the East Coast, and it's 7 p.m. in Jerusalem, the capital of Israel. Today is November 28, 2016, and this is Orly Benny Davis with The Impossible Truth. Today on BBS Radio, we are going to look at the stage and events in the Middle East and work out some kind of plans and ideas about what we in the Middle East see and what we would like to see in America. It's important to understand that all players are gathered together. It's all time after Thanksgiving when we are ready for the high holidays. And it's not, you know, the Christian high holiday, of course, but it's about time that we settle down in accord with everybody else. And meanwhile, while we've been thinking, doing, contemplating, we had events, you know, that they're bigger than us, the events when people are passing away, people that actually determine history, change it, and actually maybe were bad news for some. I'm not sure if good for others, but there were. And they were part of history. And when we turn the page on this history, it's good for everybody. Let's listen to the news about Fidel Castro passing away and what Nigel Farage, the Englishman, said about him.
There, the people reacting to this. Speaking of the people reacting, we've got a great guest now to ask about this. Nigel Farage, he's a member of the European Parliament and leader of the UK Independence Party, joins us live from London. Nigel, we have to get your reaction. The people in the streets of Miami celebrating, reacting to the death of the Cuban dictator. What's your reaction this morning?
Well, Castro was proof, wasn't he, that state socialism makes people poorer and makes the world a more dangerous place. And, you know, it may be over 50 years ago, but let's not forget the Cuban Missile Crisis was the closest that the world came to nuclear catastrophe. So whether it's in good taste to celebrate someone's passing or not is another issue, but I kind of get it.
Yeah, and Nigel, as a leader of the Brexit movement, you, of course, just recently met here in New York with President-elect Donald Trump, and during the campaign here in the U.S., he talked about rolling back some of the executive actions by President Obama in terms of opening relations a bit with Cuba. What's your sense about how the incoming U.S. president may approach all of this?
Well, it's tough to tell because, you know, was Fidel Castro behind the scenes still pulling the strings, or was his brother, you know, actually genuinely running it? I just think that if Cuba, I think what President Trump, when he's in, will want to see is Cuba actually now, with the passing of Fidel Castro, moving into the 21st century, becoming democratic. And then I think there could be good relations.
Sir, do you think that it's possible that with a transition from President Obama's presidency to Donald Trump, that you could see, for lack of a better word, a reset, perhaps the world community coming together to actually try to help Cuba come into the 21st century, to provide them more economic freedom, to bring capitalism there? There's a lot of potential there. It's a beautiful island. And I could imagine that on the world stage, you could actually exert some pressure.
Yes, I mean, let's face it, Cuba's got some wonderful natural resources. It could be a very rich and successful place, but it has to open up, it has to become democratic, it has to recognize the total failure of Marxist communism. I think with all these things, what's really interesting about Trump's approach, and we saw it during the campaign when he flew down to Mexico, is this is a president who spent, you know, half a century in business. He spent his life sitting round the table, meeting people, you know, and thrashing out deals. And I think the change of style will be that Trump will show himself to be open to go and meet all sorts of people, whether on the face of it they look friendly or not. And I think that will be a very good, positive thing, and it will cast America across the whole world in a very positive light.
Nigel, to your point, I wonder whether, despite some of the tough rhetoric from Donald Trump in the campaign, to perhaps win Florida, as Dana and I were talking about before the show a few moments ago, whether or not now, as you say, he becomes president, and as the master negotiator starts saying, well, you know, one of the Castro brothers is now dead, the other is in his 80s. As you say, this is a failing regime anyway, and maybe he will have more of an open door to Cuba and think that American capitalism flooding into Havana may be something that brings the freedom that you're talking about.
I think Trump's instincts will say absolutely all of those things. You know, he knows that the free market works, you know, provided it's not dominated by giant Wall Street banks and multinationals. Mm-hmm. But if you allow genuine flows of capital and you let people work hard and make money, it equals success. And goodness me, didn't America see that under Reagan 30 years ago? And if that happens in America, and if that message gets spread to Cuba and elsewhere, then that's good for the whole planet.
One last question on that, because there has been this belief in the West that economic liberalization or economic freedom or capitalism will inevitably bring about political reform. We hoped that would happen in China and when opening up there, but the Chinese regime has found a way to benefit the state and grow themselves and still have oppressed the people. Do you think you're going to get real openings in Cuba without demanding political reforms? That's the criticism of the deal that Barack Obama cut through executive action. So what more can be done to press the Cubans for political freedom?
No, I think that's right. I think the capital flows have to follow that political reform. And you know, that is where a President Trump or his team has got to go and explain to prominent members of Cuban society, come on, guys, you open this up, the money will come, your people will be richer and have better lives. And I think that's right. I think that free flows of money can be a great benefit to mankind. I think the problem in the West that we've got is that just so much of our politics has been dominated not by the idea of free market capitalism, but by the growth of political corporatism. The big banks and the multinationals, virtually in Europe particularly, virtually owning the entire political process. And that's what we here are trying to break down after the Brexit vote.
Absolutely.
And Nigel, I wonder if we can widen the lens a little bit about this Trump transition. There's been quite a bit of discussion here, particularly among conservatives in the United States over the last couple of days, about who might be the Secretary of State. And I wonder, as you sit in London and think about sort of the global reaction to Donald Trump coming to power, the idea that Mitt Romney, one of his big foes, might be the Secretary of State, or will it be Rudy Giuliani, who's been a loyalist? There's a great debate there. And now we're hearing, well, maybe there might be a third way. There could be a General Petraeus or John Bolton, the former ambassador. What's your sense there, and having known Donald Trump and sat down with him just very recently, about what might be his approach in terms of the world stage?
Well, of course, he has two things to do, doesn't he? On the one hand, he has to keep faith with the people that voted him in and on his commitments. But on the other, he has got a healing job to do in the Republican Party. You know, remember, around about the time of the second debate in St. Louis, you know, most senior Republicans ran for the hills and left him high and dry. So he has to do a little bit of both. He's got to try and get that party back together again. My sense is that the Secretary of State role is so crucial that he needs to have somebody who will recognize that missions like Libya, that missions like Iraq, actually made the world a less safe place and led to a vacuum into which ISIS leapt. So I think that to whoever he picks and whatever the view they took on those previous military interventions, he needs to get people now who recognize just knocking out dictators because you don't like them actually can make the world worse and not better. And he also needs somebody who recognizes that whatever we think of Putin as a human being, the West really needs to stop provoking Russia and start sitting around a table and having a conversation with them.
Well, Mr. Farage, on the you talked about widening the lens, widening it even further. You know, you have the moment of Brexit, you have the moment of Trump's election, then you have the implementation, which is the difficult part. And there's plenty of roadblocks that have run into actually leaving the EU. Just like the press and others here criticizing what they call disarray in the transition. What are the techniques you see from opponents of these movements that they're using to sort of stymie progress on a Brexit or stymie progress on a president-elect Trump?
Well, we've got Jill Stein attempting legal actions to try and overturn results. But I have to say, I'm not taking that too seriously. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, Trump's victory is such that he will be in charge of the people, you know, steering America forward. So there'll be criticisms. There'll be elements of the liberal media who will never accept him. But he's in charge. Our position here is a bit more serious in that the people spoke. But just in the last few days, we've had a former Labour Prime Minister, Blair, a former Conservative Prime Minister, Major. We've got the current leader of the Liberal Party in this country, all saying they want another referendum because they want to overturn the result. And I could say, well, they're just sore losers. But actually, it's a bit more serious than that here. You know, we have got people in our political establishment in Britain who look disdainfully upon the view of ordinary voters. So we are going to have a much bigger battle to get Brexit in place than Donald Trump is going to have to put in place his policies.
Nigel Farage, you've certainly covered the globe for us. Some tough talk for both the Castro brothers and Jill Stein. I take my hat off to cover that gamut like that. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much. All right.
All right, and we are back. It's Orly Benny Davis with Impossible Truth on BBS Radio. Today, the fact that Nigel Farage was talking about, Fidel Castro and everything what corresponds to the old deal, the old new deal is the old deal of the world. It was Fidel Castro, of course. It was the European Union with Britain that the Brexit broke ranks with that. All the old age is changing. And why is that? It's because the rule of engagement did not change. And everything come to a place where or you break it or you change it. And many, of course, the politician, they don't like change, so it come to a break. So England is facing a Brexit, which will empower them more because they'll be free to cut their deals. And the European Union that is facing a change, especially in Italy, and now the new election in Germany, which Angela Merkel is going to run again, which is a good news because somebody needs to hold the stuff together. But we'll bring together some new resolve. But let's not forget that Germany is not in that strong position as it used to be. And the Deutsche Bank needs some sustaining. And all the cluster of goods that been floating out, like loans, like Mercedes, like all big deals that came out of Germany are out for sale now in lesser cost. It's a good opportunity to get, for you guys to invest in Germany because it's a strong country and it deserves some attention. But I guess that everybody sustained some loss. It's not easy to run such a big corporation like the European Union, especially when you have the privileged one running the bank accounts ragged. Anyway, let's go on. You know, the important thing in this stage, which somebody was trying to ask Nigel Farage about the opportunity to elect a new Secretary of State. Now, do you guys realize what the Secretary of State from the United States is? He's the guy that holds all secrets to the world diplomacy. He's a man who can deal, bring together, and force, or not force, and make peaceful arrangement. Something that many people did in the past, many secretaries of state succeeded to do. Some of them were not successful enough. And the question about if it's Mitt Romney or Rudy Giuliani, for me, it's not even a question because Mitt Romney, by all means, has no skill on the level of international know-how. He comes from a different background. Is not a very open-minded kind of person to indulge with everybody craziness around the world, because just figure, you go into one country, they have that rule, and you go to another, it's another rule, and everything has to change fast, and you have to be so smart and so fast, and only a New Yorker, really, only New Yorker can beat that. That's why I will pledge, I will support, I'll sustain, and I will pray for Rudy Giuliani's success as the Secretary of State of the United States of America. Because if there is a man that I can trust to bring order like he brought in New York City, is that kind of man. And with, you know, a president like Donald Trump, I'm sure that we're going to have a better tomorrow. And seriously, we need some good people to run this world. And everybody was stacking, you know, oh, Donald Trump didn't have what he takes to be a president. I said, no, this guy actually did us a favor. He came from the mountain Olympus. He descended to the people to run it, because as the old proverb said, if you don't handle the world, you might be run by fools. And we had our share of them. So by, you know, without disrespect of anybody in particular, you know, but it's a continuation of a failure after failure. And it's not true that we can pinpoint who did it. It's just like a reckless, you know, existence or an idealism that never came true. To think that the world can turn the page on their old belonging, living, and just become a democracy, like, because democracy brings what? Freedom is good for, you know, for the slave. Freedom is good for women. Freedom is good for, you know, people that are in dark places. But the truth of the matter for the other is bring responsibility, which not many people like to bear. People like to, you know, get what they want and without giving back anything sometimes. But today is a different day, is a day that we are turning that page on history. And with Fidel Castro, that was oblivious to the necessity of Cuban. And whatever is gift to the world of medicine with all his eye hospitals, we are very happy to know that there was some ability to improve something. But Cuba stayed in the dark ages for too long. Think about America and think about Cuba. You know, next door to America. Why? Why you do that? How can you do that to a people? So we need to embrace them. It's like the cuddly baby that was in the dark for too long. We need to bring them home and make them a part of this universe of ours. So with that saying, it's time for women of the world, great women of the world, to come along and help us embrace all those obscured places and send them some healing, some medication, food for the needy. And I'm telling you, in this world of ours, we need more great women to be a part of the United Nations, so we can start being in peace. And Donald Trump, the elected president of the U.S., chose a wise choice to send our Southern Carolina governor, Nikki Haley, to be the next ambassador of the USA in the United Nations. Good for her. Let's listen to that.
And we start with the Fox News alert. You know, they're calling it the Trump bump. We are keeping a close eye on the markets this morning after the Dow closed above 19,000 for the very first time in its 120-year history. You know, it was the second straight day all four major U.S. stock indexes reached new record high territory. Investors have been betting on the prospect of a more investor and business-friendly government and policies under President-elect Trump. Markets opening in here about half an hour. We're keeping an eye on it for you this morning. But first, we start with President-elect Trump's administration now taking shape. Fox News confirming that Mr. Trump has chosen South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley to serve as the next ambassador to the United Nations. And good morning, everyone. I'm Eric Shawn. This is America's Newsroom.
And I'm Heather Childers. Thank you so much for joining us. Bill and Martha obviously out today, but you know who's in? Nikki Haley. Fox News confirming that she has accepted Mr. Trump's offer as UN ambassador. A formal announcement expected later today. Haley, no fan of Trump, you'll remember, during the election, backing Senators Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz during the primaries. Former presidential candidate Dr. Ben Carson also confirming that he has been asked to serve as Secretary of Housing and Urban Development.
And meanwhile, Mr. Trump has been sitting down with the New York Times, did that yesterday, discussing everything from Hillary Clinton to possible action on climate change. Peter Ducey, live in Palm Beach, Florida, where Mr. Trump has gone off to Mar-a-Lago for the holiday. So, Peter, let's start with, first, the breaking news this morning, Governor Nikki Haley going to the United Nations as our ambassador. What do you know about Mr. Trump's relationship with her?
Eric, we know a lot more right now than we did 20 minutes ago because the president-elect just gave us a statement that says, in part, quote, Governor Haley has a proven track record of bringing people together regardless of background or party affiliation to move critical policies forward for the betterment of her state and our country. She is also a proven deal maker, and we look forward to making plenty of deals. She will be a great leader representing us on the world stage. Now, Trump's appointment of Haley also shows that he's not just interested in bringing people who have only ever supported him into the fold, because Haley did once say she didn't know if Trump could win a general election. That was while she was stumping for Marco Rubio in South Carolina. But because Mr. Trump did win, the governor, who was born to Indian parents, is set to join the 45th president's cabinet. Her national profile rose significantly last year when she spoke very movingly as the Confederate flag was moved from the State House in Columbia, South Carolina, following the mass murder at Emmanuel AME Church in Charleston. And she was even once rumored to be a VP shortlister. But now the South Carolina governor is set to start splitting her time between New York and D.C. as the America's top representative to the United Nations if the Senate confirms her nomination. Eric.
Yeah, and we'll see how that goes. Meanwhile, Mr. Trump seems to be basically backing away from his promise to appoint a special prosecutor to prosecute Hillary Clinton. Some of his supporters are going to be very upset over this.
The president-elect says that prosecution is still a possibility, Eric, but he thinks that if the decision is finally made, once he takes over, to let her off the hook, he can explain his thought process to his supporters. He was at the New York Times yesterday at their headquarters in Manhattan meeting with reporters, and one of the writers who was there tweeted the following, quote, Trump said he does not think they will be disappointed, as in his supporters, and he also said, quote, I think I will explain it's that we, in many ways, will save our country. The president-elect also indicated a little bit more about his feelings, showing some empathy for his former Democratic rival, saying this, I don't want to hurt the Clintons, I really don't. She went through a lot and suffered greatly in many different ways. The president-elect also making some news about global warming and saying that he is considering, he has an open mind to withdrawing from international climate change accords, and that his main concern with those is that it's costing American companies a lot of dough. Eric.
Yeah, and meanwhile, Peter, finally, Dr. Ben Carson being talked about it being a possible HUD secretary. What do we know about that this morning?
We know that it is very close to being a done deal, that Dr. Carson told the president-elect Donald Trump he wanted a few days over the Thanksgiving holiday to think the new job offer over. But GOP sources say that Dr. Carson is pretty close to accepting the position of Housing and Urban Development Director. This does come just a few days after Dr. Carson indicated that his preference was to not serve in a Trump administration in any sort of a formal role, but that he would do it if the transition team looked at a bunch of candidates and decided that he was the best one. Sounds like that's what happened, and they may be together for a few more years now. Eric?
All right, Peter, we'll see if that announcement comes officially later on today. Thanks so much. Peter Ducey, live in Palm Beach. Heather?
So let's talk a little bit more about all of this. Katie Pavlich is news editor for townhall.com and a Fox News contributor. Katie, thank you for joining us.
Good morning.
Another day, more announcements. You just heard what the president-elect Donald Trump had to say. He said that Governor Haley has a proven track record of bringing people together, amongst other things. What do you think?
It's very clear with Governor Haley's record in South Carolina that she's a leader. And the criticism of her in this position is that she doesn't necessarily have a lot of foreign policy experience, but she does have experience with American values and principles. And she's very good at espousing those views. And so when she goes to the UN, which of course is hostile to American values, she's going to be able to talk about the things that are important to Americans: free speech, freedom of religions, tolerance, women's rights in countries where women don't have a lot of freedom. So those are some of the things that she can move forward in a very hostile environment. And I think that she'll be able to work with some of the people in the UN that maybe we haven't been able to work with.
Katie, what do you think pushed her to the top of the list such that she was chosen? Was this also an effort to be a little bit more diverse?
Well, there has been a lot of criticism specifically from Elizabeth Warren saying that Donald Trump's choices haven't been diverse enough, but I highly doubt that the president-elect is taking advice from Senator Warren. I think that he is truly choosing people who are qualified and capable of doing the job and those who can advance U.S. interests. And one thing that isn't being talked about here with the Haley choice that I think is important to bring up is the impact that this is going to have on Israel. Obviously, Israel is a huge ally of the United States. Jared Kushner has ties to Israel, obviously, and Donald Trump putting Nikki Haley in this position gives Israel some calm and room to breathe at the UN because they, of course, are under attack. Nikki Haley was the first governor to sign legislation making sure that boycotts of Israeli goods were illegal in South Carolina, so that's something she can take to the UN and really stand up for our democracy and ally in the Middle East.
But here's the other thing. Word is that she could possibly be paired with Mitt Romney as Secretary of State. So a lot of people, I know you're on social media, are not very happy because they saw both of these people as very disloyal, not loyal to Donald Trump. And so they're not happy about it.
Well, I have some news for the people who aren't happy on either side of this, whether you are against Trump or for him. This is bigger than Donald Trump, and it's bigger than the presidency. This is about people coming together, Mitt Romney, Nikki Haley, and Donald Trump, even though they've had their differences, and putting the country and the priorities of the United States above their own egos and what they've maybe said about each other. And so putting those feelings aside proves that they're all grown-ups, that they're putting the best interests of the country first, and that they're willing to work together for the better of the future for all of us.
Governor Huckabee was on Fox and Friends this morning. He said that the president-elect should have them sign a loyalty pledge.
No. But
someone who was loyal, Dr. Ben Carson, and you know, he was in, he was out. He says he's not going to accept a position, but now the big rumor is, you know, for HUD secretary.
Yeah, I mean, Ben Carson, as you mentioned, was in, he was out, he's back in. He was on with Neil Cavuto yesterday talking about how he actually very much understands this position and the inner cities and could actually bring a lot of change and goodwill to that position. And there's a lot of controversial policies that the Obama administration has implemented in that department. Ben Carson could certainly take a look at those and reverse some of them for the benefit of the communities that he is very familiar with.
Why do you think that he jumped back into it? Was he waiting specifically for the position, like this position, one that he wanted?
You know, I'm not really sure exactly why he jumped back in. He did say that, you know, if he was the most qualified for the job, of course, he would serve his country if he was asked. But he made it pretty clear in some of the statements that he released last week and earlier this week that he really wasn't interested in taking a position because he didn't think he had the experience not being in government. But I guess if you can run for president, you can certainly run a department of the federal government. So I'm sure he'll do a good job if he is chosen and is accepting of the position.
All right. Thank you so much, Katie. Appreciate you joining us, and have
Thank
a great
you.
Thanksgiving.
You too. Happy Thanksgiving.
Well, Katie just noted.
All right, you guys. You have to understand, maybe you didn't realize that the character of Donald Trump is a very polite, proper. The southern, you know, southern of the state, like South Carolina, is really a place where southern hospitality respect and all the value that used to be dominated, you know, in the normal day of America is there to stay. That's why the choice is so clear. That's why I will bet that Trey Gowdy can be a very good selection too, because that kind of people like Mike Pence, it's a really clear now to see that the kind of people that the president elect like to choose. And why not? He wants to bring America, you know, to our whole time by bringing the old traditional way of being. I think if the Democrats wanted it the casual and more, you know, happy, you know, everybody's happy and they're all good, you know, comfortable and everything, even though that, you know, they are very proper, of course, in Congress and in Senate, by all means. But there are people that are really distinct with their class and where they action. And sometimes, you know, the representative forget that it takes so much hard work, very hard ability, a great ability to overcome a lot of challenges. And that's why the president-elect is bringing along some of, you know, they call it billionaires or millionaires, whatever you call it, but they're successful men. Let's listen to what they have to say about that.
During the presidential election, then-candidate Donald Trump vowed to make America great again for all Americans. But tonight, he's taking some heat for appearing to stack his cabinet with the super wealthy. Politico with the headline, Trump's team of gazillionaires. Politico surmises that if Trump appoints folks like his education secretary, pick Betsy DeVos, as well as Rudy Giuliani, Mitt Romney, and others, his cabinet and administration could be worth as much as $35 billion. The New York Times deputy Washington editor, Jonathan Weissman, sarcastically tweeting, between some of those names and others, this is going to be quite the working class administration. In moments, we'll be joined by Anthony Scaramucci, a member of Donald Trump's transition team. We'll ask him about the criticism. But we begin with Peter Ducey reporting tonight from Palm Beach, Florida, outside Mar-a-Lago.
Sandra, because working class voters propelled Donald Trump to the presidency, some on the left are now crying foul that the billionaire is surrounding himself with other billionaires. The two people who are reportedly the president-elect's favorites for the top two spots at the Commerce Department, Wilbur Ross and Todd Ricketts, both billionaires. Another name swirling around as a possible cabinet member is Harold Hamm, an oil billionaire. And the education secretary he's already nominated, Betsy DeVos, comes from a family worth at least $5 billion. Politico did the math and speculates that if you add up the net worth of Trump's rumored cabinet secretaries, the sum could reach $35 billion. But the current administration behaved basically the same way when filling key positions, even nicknaming one proposal the Buffett Rule, after the second richest person in the country, Warren Buffett. A quick look at President Obama's own cabinet room over the last 8 years shows massive wealth. There's Commerce Secretary Penny Pritzker, a businesswoman from Chicago worth $2.4 billion. Her dad helped found Hyatt Hotels, and she grew up to lead a lucrative real estate business. Then Secretary of State John Kerry, worth $103 million, and also married to Heinz food processing heiress Teresa Heinz. And the Veterans Affairs Secretary Bob McDonald made $15.9 million in 2013 alone while working as the chief executive of Procter & Gamble. President Obama did bring aboard a Secretary of State who claimed to have been dead broke just a few years earlier, but as it turns out, that Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, was worth $15 million while in office and a whole lot more now. Sandra.
All right, Peter, thank you. Joining us now, Anthony Scaramucci is a member of President-elect Donald Trump's transition team and served on Mr. Trump's Economic Advisory Council. Anthony, thanks for being here tonight.
It's great to be here. Happy post-Thanksgiving.
You too, sir. Can you clear some of this up? Because there is a lot of talk about him surrounding himself with billionaires as if that's a bad thing.
Well, I think the only thing that Peter left out is with the Trump bump, all of those people are a lot richer, including Warren Buffett, who's up $11 billion in the last 2 weeks.
And you're referencing the stock market rally we've seen since President.
So I think the good news is the denigration of wealthy people and the divisiveness of that sort of class warfare is sort of coming to an end. And I think that's a very good thing for the American people. The other thing that that article left out is that every one of these people, Sandra, is an unbelievable philanthropist, gives tons
Betsy
of money
DeVos.
Away. She's an incredible philanthropist. In fact, she's dedicated her whole life to education, understanding the issues of education, and frankly, how to help poor people in indigent areas and in the inner cities get their children the quality education that they need so that they can have an aspirational working class conversion into the middle class and hopefully into the affluent.
By the way, so, as Peter...
So I think this is a fantastic thing for the American people that he's focused on meritocracy and talent as opposed to this nonsense of picking people based on their net worths not being enough.
As Peter pointed out at the top of his report, he said working class voters propelled Trump to victory in this election. Now Democrats are crying foul. Well, isn't that a key point? This isn't Trump supporters that are crying foul saying we don't like what we're seeing. This is the left that is criticizing him for this.
The left has got a series of talking points about railing on rich people. They think that that class division is a really powerful antidote for them, that they can get their people out to the polls. I think people are in general very, very tired of that. You know what people want? They want wage growth. They want jobs. They want quality education for their children. They want a right-sizing and an evening of the playing field as it relates to trade so that we can have super free trade, but let it be fair for the American people and for the American worker. And so if there are super distinguished people that have done amazing things with their lives, mm-hmm. that have led to the great American success story that you just heard about, then so be it. Let's let those people help the rest of us get to where we want to go.
So let's clear up a couple other things as well, though, because when you dig into the, when you're looking at Mnuchin and Bannon.
Yeah, he would love the Mnuchin. I'm going to call him Mnuchin.
Okay,
tomorrow.
Well, you can tease him all you want. It's my fault. Sorry about that. And Bannon, as we know, his Goldman Sachs background. I mean, you're talking about Wall Street backgrounds. How important is that, considering Donald Trump said, you know, he made his election on the system is rigged? Well, a lot of Main Street and those that are making the average $55,000 a year in this country, they think Wall Street's rigged. How is that for them to see him put
I'm also a product of the Goldman Sachs, and I've worked on Wall Street for 28 years. And I've had this conversation with the president-elect, and I'll continue to say the same thing. There might be some bad actors on Wall Street. There's no question about that. But there are bad actors in many industries. But guys like Steve Bannon and Steve Mnuchin, in fact, they've been terrific people. They're high ethical, high integrity. I've worked very closely with both of those people. And I have a tremendous amount of confidence in them that they're going to do the right thing for the American people.
But while you're here, and we've got this news tonight on this divided transition team that you're seeing
very
reports
divided,
all
yes.
over, very divided. But Mitt Romney, apparently, we saw the tweets from Kellyanne Conway today. Mm-hmm. How is it going? Can you let us know before you go?
Well, first of all, as it relates to Kellyanne, I love her because she's been so instrumental in the success of the campaign. Everyone on the team respects her, and so she's entitled to her opinion, and she's sharing it with people over Twitter, so God bless. As it relates to the transition in general, I said this to Bloomberg, I said it in a press conference, the transition has been nothing but orderly. The information being provided that the president-elect and the vice president-elect...
Is he still being considered?
Who?
Mitt Romney.
Well, I have to take Vice President Pence at his word when he says he's being seriously considered for Secretary of State. I do think that there are other candidates in the field. And here's the thing, that the message to the American people is that there's a very orderly, very disciplined process. And what the president-elect is doing, he's doing a wide range.
All right. Donald Trump is definitely doing it, and he's working hard in bringing everybody to the plate. And I want, you know, to pay attention to Representative Jim Jordan, a guy that, you know, he congratulated the president-elect, and he's a friend of Mike Pence, and he's looking forward to supporting his fight for accountable limited government. He works hard for the veterans, and he, you know, want accountability in front of the people. So I would say that Representative Jim Jordan is a great man to watch, to see what he can do for our new government or the new cycle, because we need all the players, the good players this time. And there are others, you know, in the mix, and I don't want to mention a lot of them, but I'm telling you, we need to remember Frank Labiondo, which works hard. We have Jeff Fleming, that is really, really good. Of course, Jim Jordan, and we have Cynthia Lumens, and we have Marta Rubio and Mia, you know, Robbie, and Mia Love and Joe Heck, which is wonderful. Ray Dribble, of course. We have so many. Lynn Jenkins, yes, she's wonderful too. Mike Kaufman and Dave Rehart. How they spell it, I don't know. How they pronounce it, I don't know. But what I'm saying is there is a bunch of really good Republican in the country to choose and to work with. And I'm sure that they're going to have a lot of love this time and a lot of, you know, good people to join. So I wanted to keep on going. And before that, we want to listen to a song, okay, just to smooth the things up. Let's listen to it.
Chiudo gli occhi e penso a lei, il profumo dolce della pelle sua, è una voce dentro che mi sta portando dove nasce il suo.
Right, all right. Sei il mio grande amore, you are my big love. The Volo, Italian as usual, they know to sing love to us girls, especially if you understand it. Anyway, we are keeping on going because we're almost done with the show today, but we have still a few segments that I want to you to listen. Let's listen to what Hannity has to say.
And welcome to Hannity, and tonight, President-elect Donald Trump beats down the abusively biased alt-radical left mainstream media. Now, Trump's senior advisor, Kellyanne Conway, will join us in a few minutes. But first, the president-elect is now fighting back against the press that openly colluded with the Clinton campaign and that tried to undermine his candidacy every single step of the way. Now, earlier today, he met with the New York Times. We'll have more on that in just a second. But first, yesterday at Trump Tower, network executives and anchors from CNN, MSNBC, NBC News, ABC News, CBS News, and Fox News attended a meeting meant to reset relations with the president-elect. Now, Fox News executives were in attendance, but they wouldn't comment since it was an off-the-record briefing. However, according to the New York Post, Donald Trump used the opportunity to call out many members of this dishonest press. Now, Trump reportedly told them all, quote, "We're in a room full of liars, the deceitful, dishonest media who got it all wrong." And Trump even took direct aim at CNN President Jeff Zucker, saying that everyone at the network were liars and that Zucker should be ashamed of himself. Now, the president-elect didn't stop there. He reportedly hit NBC News for their coverage of his campaign, and Trump slammed ABC News's Martha Raddatz, who was at the meeting, for almost crying during election night coverage. You may remember this.
Tim Kaine has a son in the Marine Corps. He was asked by John Dickerson, so if Donald Trump is democratically elected and your son is serving as a Marine, you wouldn't trust his life under that commander-in-chief? And Kaine said, I wouldn't. That's a pretty extraordinary thing to say. If you have a son in the Marine Corps and that you don't trust the commander-in-chief, the people in the military defend the Constitution.
Oh, now I'm sure some in the room had their little feelings hurt, but really, who cares? Didn't they deserve every bit of what Trump said to them? Now, keep in mind, some of these so-called unbiased journalists, they laughed off Donald Trump and said he never stood a chance years before he even decided to run for president. And they each had to eat their words. Watch this.
Donald Trump has been saying that he will run for president as a Republican, which is surprising since I just assumed he was running as a joke.
Do it. Do it. Look at me. Do it. I will personally write you a campaign check now on behalf of this country, which does not want you to be president, but which badly wants you to run.
This man has got some momentum, and we better be ready for the fact that he may be leading the Republican ticket.
Next, I know you don't believe that, but I want to go on.
Sorry to laugh.
Which Republican candidate has the best chance of winning the general election?
Of the declared ones right now, Donald Trump.
Mr. Trump, to answer your call for political honesty, I just want to say you're not going to be president, all right? It's been fun.
President Obama will go down as perhaps the worst president in the history of the United States! Exclamation point at real Donald Trump. Democrat at Real Donald Trump. At least I will go down as a...
And you guys, when we laugh about the proposition of somebody getting into office, you have to really, really be careful, because you never know. You might find them, or he or she, as a commander-in-chief. So right now we have a president-elect that, if you look in the history, he was preparing all along. He was ready. He didn't want to take it earlier because he wanted somebody else to do the dirty job. But since nobody came, or we were run by fool, as they say, we have this proposition right now to have a president that is actually going to act and do something for the universe and not just talk. And more than that, we are talking about talking. I know that we are running out of time now, but there was a situation in Israel since last week of firing. And the fire, you know, racketeering of some sort of, you know, terrorism, was firing a lot of houses around the north of Israel. And many people were thinking, what the heck, it's the Arab-Israeli. And the Arab-Israeli was saying, no, it's not, wasn't. And sure enough, you know, we had a close encounter with the forces of ISIS in the north of Israel, in the Golan Heights. And in that moment, when we realized that Israel realized that there is some forces there, then bombarded the heck out of them. And then they sent a warning to the all ISIS. You know, there is maybe a chance that you guys are fighting civilian, you might win, or people or country that are not equipped and not ready. But if they dare to come and even open the gate and try to, you know, to undermine the sovereignty of Israel in the Golan Heights, they're going to get it really bad. So by all means, it must be a point of turning at this point, because they touch base on the Golan Heights. And we need to assess who we want to win at this point. And it's not easy, right? But the truth of the matter is, the rebels are not, they could not rebel. They didn't organize, or I don't know who they are, so they're not even the forces of good, so I can determine. And we have ISIS there, so they're actually going into the same category. And we get the forces of Syria right now that are working to safeguard some civilian, which is a new day. And I know that there is the guy from the humanitarian watch in the United Nations, Stephen O'Brien, that says that they're trying to save more life, and we need to assess the situation faster and faster. So maybe if we all come to agree that, you know, Assad, the regime, is going to save some life, give us some good deeds, give us some proofs of his intention, so we can actually support a new solution in Syria's forces and try to determine how to finish this war. And in Iraq, it's still going, and the Kurds, you know, they're going to have their country, because this is the shuffling of the cards right now. And the Kurds, 30 million people, they deserve a country. So it's going to be realigned with the Kurdan, even the Kurdish, even that the Turks want to have their global domination again. And they cannot. They cannot, because they don't have the character, they don't have the moral level, high ground to hold for. And by all means, they're still building up their relationship with the free world. They didn't even get to the European Union, because there are actually obstacle right now to some kind of ordinance. They are even threatening to throw back all those refugees that they agreed to receive. You know, going back on agreement is not really conducive to any accord. So we need to go back, sit down, get the Assad regime to save as much people as possible, get back everybody to their own corner, Now let's set the stage for this new deal that is going to be cut soon. And just remember, there is a God, and it's not us. So in that note, I want to send all my love to you with safe regard and safe return to all the soldier everywhere and sweet recovery to all the wounded. And please, God, save this world of ours, because we need some peace. From me, Orly Benny Davis, so checking out. Bye-bye.